好的，
也是可能你。Are you typing?
Yes, ma'am. I'm trying to unmute. I'm at work.
Oh, okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We will begin with Elisham Yehud.
Okay, let me mute.
Okay. We will begin with a Lashem Yehud, and then we will start with the Psalms landing page, which is available on the Unique Astrological Times landing page in the section titled Tahanit Dibur. And that's right after the Rosh Chodesh Tevet. When the Psalms landing page opens up, scroll down to Tehillim 68, which is where we will begin. L'shem Yehud Kud Shabarichu Ishkin Tei Bidhilu Urkimu Udhilu Udhilu Urkimu Le'akda L'shem Yudhei Bavavhei B'Yehuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La sok Torah mitzvah. Vayino amadunai Elohinu elenu maasei adenu konene elenu maasei adenu konenehu. Tehillim 68. An awe-inspiring and wondrous prayer, David composed this psalm referring to a future event. When Sennacherib would surround Jerusalem on Passover during the reign of Hezekiah. He also prophesies about the good we will enjoy during the Messianic era. The above kavanah is a traditional kavanah to use when saying this psalm. The first word is lamnatseach. Please refer to the Introduction to the Yearning for Redemption PDF file, which starts on page 6 for additional information. There are 36 verses in Psalm 68. 36 is a number that connects to the concealed 36 tzaddikim, the righteous men, the 36 righteous men. There are many stories told about the concealed 36. There are 64 verses said on day 12 of each month. This is, applies to the people who read all of the Psalms during the Hebrew months. Each month they complete all 150 Psalms. The number of verses that said on a day relates to the energy of the day. There are 64 verses said on day 12, the 12th of the month. And 64 connects to the Hebrew words with the same gematria that translates as the phrase and Noah and hope. And 64 can be translated as the doorway to the support. That's because 64 is two letters, Samet and Dalet. We will now transition to the Psalms landing page. I mean, away from the Psalms landing page to the link to the Mechon Mamre. Scroll down to chapter 68, and I will begin. I don't think we have ever completed 36 verses in a given day. So we may be needing to do this for this verse, this chapter of Tehillim, over two Fridays. We'll see. Lam natseach le David mizmor shir. For the leader, a psalm of David, a song. Verse 2. Yakum Elohim Yahutu O Yevav Vianusu Masanav Mipanav. Let Elohim arise, let his enemies be scattered, and let them that hate him flee before him. Seven words which connects to the unification of Zeranpin with Malchut. And 36 letters, as we heard earlier, 36 connects to the concealed tzaddikim. It's relatively common knowledge about the number 36 connecting to the tzaddikim. What most people leave off is that the word concealed, because there are actually 72, 36 times 2, tzaddikim in the world. And 36 concealed tzaddikim. The third verse. Kehindof asan, kehindof kehimes donag. Mifneish Yodu Rishaim Mifne Elohim. As smoke is driven away, so drive them away. Obviously, it refers to the enemies of Hashem who hate him. As wax melts before the fire, so let the wicked perish at the presence of Elohim. Always remember, Elohim can have two meanings. two meanings. One meaning is the angelic chieftains, the princes, the leaders of each nation in the spiritual level. And the other Elohim refers to a attribute of Hashem. In English, it would be an attribute of God. Elohim is the attribute of judgment. Verse 4. With tzaddikim yismechu ya'altu lifnei Elohim v'yasisu v'simcha. But let the righteous be glad. Let them exult before Elohim. Yea, let them rejoice with gladness. Seven words. We know the answer to the meaning of the seven. We know some of them because we don't know all of them that we have bringing to our conscious mind when we hear the number seven. And that's part of the training of the Kabbalah, to bring all of the things that you have heard, that you have learned but don't remember, that are built into your unconscious mind. When you hear a word, bringing that down from the conscious to the unconscious. This is the training of the Kabbalah. Thirty-seven letters relates to the concealed aspect of the world that is coming, the concealed aspect of Bina. I've explained this before, but it's something that always needs to be reinforced. We have four levels of Hashem's name based on the way the words, the letters are spelled out. One of those letters, one of those ways of spelling the name of Hashem with all the letters spelled out, is a gematria of 72, which relates to Chachma. One of those ways is the level of 63, which is Bina. One of those is 45, which is Zeranpin. And one is 52, which is Malchut. If we look at the world that is coming, the world of Bina, the Sephirah of Bina, and we take 63 and subtract the revealed letters, which is Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, 26, we're left with a remainder of 37. This represents the concealed aspect of Bina because the letters aren't revealed. If I say the letter Yud, or if I see the letter Yud on the page, there's also a Vav and a Dalet that's written on the page as well. Except I don't see the Vav and Dalet. They're concealed. The fifth verse. Shi Ru Elohim Zamru Shemo Solu La Roke Bia Ravot Bia Shemo Bizu Lifana. Sing unto Elohim. Sing praises to his name. Extol him that rides upon the skies, whose name is His name is Yah, Yud-Heh. And exult ye before him. Now, what does it mean when we change from Elohim to Yah? It's a different attribute of Hashem. Yah represents Chachma and Bina, who are always in unity. There's never a separation between the two. Just as there's never a separation on the physical level between your unconscious mind and your conscious mind. There's always communication going on. You just may not be aware of it. The number 11 has two aspects. The negative aspects is it represents the 10 sephirot in their complete state, all 10, plus the negative system. But the implication of that statement, the negative system, is that the negative system is unified. That the negative system is constantly separated within itself. That's why the world is considered negative, because what we see of each other, we don't identify that we're part of Hashem, that we're part of the hand of Hashem. Yes, we're still children. We haven't learned this. That's the goal. That's the growth, to become an adult. And when someone grows to be an adult, not a physical adult, but a spiritual adult, they no longer see each other separated from each other. That's when a person who slaps you in the face can be seen as a message from Hashem. Not that the person hurt you. Adulthood lacks selfishness. It lacks a perception of the self. Letters, and I don't have something offhand, but give me a second, I will look it up. Forty-six is composed of Mem and Vav. It's the word Mo or the word Mu. But there is a relationship between the Yud and the Vav. That relationship needs to be understood. But in a succinct way, the yud can be substituted for the vav. Because they are both male energies. They're both sharing energies. One is at a higher level than the other. When you substitute a yud for the vav in the word mem vav, you get the word me. Me translates as the English word who. Me is a word that describes the energy, the attribute of the world of, that is coming, the world of Bina. What does Bina mean? What does me mean? Reverse the letters Mem Yud into Yud Mem and you get the word Yam, the word sea. What do you do with the sea? What is the depth, the meaning of the sea spiritually? I'm having difficulty with my computer opening up the page I want to look at for the Gematria. Just a little bit longer. I hope the delay is worthwhile. The number 46 connects to the word me'ah. Me'ah is the word for 100. 100 represents completion, 10 times 10. It also is the same letters in a different order. Aleph Mem He instead of Mem Aleph He. Amma is the word for a cubit. Cubit is a measurement of length. And the word Elohai, meaning my God. You'll see it many times in the Tanakh where the Mem is left off. And people think that it's Elohim, that just for whatever reason the Mem is let off. Not there. But the reality is the number 46 is Elohai, which is the yud at the end of the word means a possessive pronoun, mine. Elohai means my God. So the word, the number 46 in this verse number 5 is rather significant. We'll go back to verse 6. Avi Yitomim Vidayan Almanot Elohim b'imon kasho. A father of the fatherless, and a judge of the widows is Elohim in his holy habitation. Seven words. Do I need to tell you the connection to the number seven? Letters. The number 33 is the Hebrew word lag, lamed gimel. Lag is a connection to the sephirot of Hod Shebahod. What is the essence of Hod Shebahod? It's the essence of the Torah. Without the limitations of the physical world. Let's take a closer look at the translation of verse 6. Avi should be translated as my father. Yitomim based on the comma, that word should be of the fatherless. I don't know what tomim means, but either somebody is a fatherless person is an orphan. Well, but their mothers may still be alive. Are they an orphan if they haven't lost both parents? What's the biblical definition? I haven't looked it up. I haven't made the effort to find out. An orphan, to me, is someone who has lost a parent, whether at the age of a child or at the physical age of an adult. Losing a parent creates an orphan. But why describe it this way? Why say a father of the fatherless when we could say an orphan? In the discussions that the rabbis will have over that question, is an orphan one who's lost both parents or only one parent? This verse from Psalms will be used as an argument to say that an orphan would only be two people, having lost both parents, because of this idea that the Torah doesn't put extraneous letters and extraneous words. If it could be done in less words, it would be. If it could be done in less letters, it would be. So there must be a meaning to this idea of Yitomim.
Hanok?
Yes, Hannah.
I was wondering if it could be David hinting at the way he was treated when he was born for his family and, put out in the fields. And in fact, Psalm 69 that we studied at for Shavuot this past Shavuot, that was what was hinted at. So maybe we'll see that in the next one. There is the Midrashim that Jesse, Ishai, his father, was thinking back the rule about the Moabites not being allowed, and even though Boaz's generation had said that rule only applied to the males, and
sense. So he was, you know, it was a kind of a Mike Lockett for those several generations that people weren't really sure if a Moabite woman was truly allowed to be, in, you know, incorporated into the Jewish family. And so he separated from his wife, Ann Nivaret, I believe is her name, and but and he was going to cohabit with another person, but that person told Nivaret, and they did what Rachel and Leah did, and he really slept with his wife, and that he had separated from a long time, and she became pregnant with David. And they didn't really realize that she was pregnant until she was about 3 months pregnant. And the other sons wanted her to be dismissed from the household, but Yishai said no. And so they treated, not only the family did, but the town treated David as if he was from Moabite lineage. And it was 28 years before Samuel came along and anointed him as the king. And so he was treated as if he was an orphan, even though he really wasn't. So that may be what's being hinted there, as well as the next psalm. He really tells you all the things he was treated as by not only his family, but the town. So that's kind of what I think.
It's well thought, and it's very possible that is the meaning. I'm just raising the questions. And always remember that there's more than one answer to any question.
Right. Well, I think most people don't. I had actually prepared that lesson for the year 205, and I never got around to teaching it until this past Shavuot. So, it's not one that most people know about. I'm going to go ahead and mute. I hope I didn't mess up your thought.
Thank you for the addition.
Okay. You're welcome.
But then we also have to ask the question, if we're referring to David as a father of the fatherless, how do we relate to David as a judge of the widows? And that could also be David from the standpoint of his connection to Bathsheba, who, because she was divorced but not yet a widow, she actually became a widow.
Well, the translation I'm looking at by Rabbi Sutton is the word defender of the widows. So it could be translated another way, I suppose. I don't know why, but this time the translation that you're reading is not matching up with my copy of Rabbi Sutton's. So I'll have to check.
Well, that could be very, very simply the reason that I never opened up Rabbi Sutton's on this particular one for whatever the reason was.
Oh.
So I'm going to do that now. We'll start using Rabbi Sutton's translation. I thought Psalm 68 was not.
I think it comes in 70 and 71. I think there's no Rabbi Sutton. I know I checked last week, because when there's not, I like to print the one from the Macomb Amory. And I thought, I told myself, well, I have a couple of weeks before I have to do that. So I'm going to mute again. I'm sorry to keep interrupting.
It's not, your interruptions are well desired, so it's not an issue. Please continue to interrupt. Anybody is welcome to interrupt.
I have to leave at 10 o'clock today because I have an appointment, and so I'm extended.
We're going to be leaving at 10 o'clock because I end the class at that time, however far we've got.
Okay. I'm going to mute again. Thank you.
I'm actually going to start over because there's an introductory on the yearning for redemption to Psalm 68 that I wasn't aware of. This psalm can be read on a number of levels. Most commentators read it as a description of Israel's history, focusing specifically around the revelation of the Torah on Mount Sinai. This is substantiated by its being read in all Sephardic congregations as a psalm for Shavuot. Ibn Ezra, who was a commentator, I believe around the 13, 1400s, and Ibn Ezra is well known for his knowledge of astrology, finds this hard to accept, because the order of the verses does not seem to support it. He inclines to reading it as a description of events in David's life. Another commentator, known as the Shla, reads it as a description of Sanherib's fall at the gates of Jerusalem. And another commentator, Meiri, he sees it as well as referring to the future battle between Mashiach and Gog, when the nations will gather to battle against the nation of Israel after the ingathering to their homeland. Verse 1. Lam naseach le David mizmor shir. Lam naseach is dedicated to the one who grants victory through his Torah. Le David mizmor shir is a song, a cutting psalm, that was composed by David in an exalted state of Ruach HaKodesh, to be read on many levels simultaneously. If you look at that translation and compare it to the Nechon Mamre translation that I read earlier, you see where Rabbi Sutton's gift of translation, by adding words and concepts, which he does in the smaller print, he's telling you that those words are not in the Hebrew translation, but they're implied if we understand the full depth of the psalm, if we understand the depth of the verse. And without that translation to an English speaker, much of the depths of the psalm is going to be lost. So here he's saying we have to jump into the future, because starting with verse 2, he's talking about a specific aspect. From verse 2 to verse 7, we're talking about the time of Mashiach, perhaps the footsteps of Mashiach as opposed to Mashiach himself. And we need to understand what is the difference in the footsteps of Mashiach to the time of Mashiach. the footsteps of Mashiach is really a period of time that is like the period of pregnancy before the birth of a human being. We know the length of time of a pregnancy is 9 months normally, but it can be as short as 7 months, 28 weeks, because a preemie who's 2 months early, the lungs are almost developed and can handle breathing with support. They're usually put into an incubator until the lungs fully develop. Or we also know that the baby can take 12 months. A new soul that is being born today, which almost never happens, but can take 12 months for the pregnancy. Now, a woman being indoctrinated into the concepts of the 9-month pregnancy by everyone around her, including what she was taught as a child and as a teenager, that woman would find it very difficult. But we all know first babies sometimes take 2, sometimes even 3 additional weeks. We attribute it to the mistake made by the doctor's calculations, which comes from the woman's memory of when she had her last period. But be that as it may, it also comes now through the ultrasounds where they can gauge the development of the fetus. So we have a tremendous improvement in technology, but we lack an understanding of the meaning of this technology and the results of the information that comes from the technology. That's why we need the Kabbalah. So we're talking now for the next 6 verses. We're talking about the footsteps of Mashiach or the time of Mashiach. And rather than read the Hebrew, because I've read the Hebrew of all 7 of these verses and we're running short of time, I'll just read the English translation, and you can relate it when you're listening on the recording, where you can go back and forth, or you can open up both windows and read them together. That may be the best approach even for me to do right now. Verse 2 from Yearning for Redemption. The time will come when Elohim will rise up and reveal himself, thinking that they can escape those who opposed him. His plan will scatter in terror. Those who despised him, his Torah, will flee before his presence. And we have a footnote, number 91. The divine name Elohim, or Elokei, or Elokechem, appears exactly 26 times in this psalm. This is intentional. As we see through the psalms, whereas the name Yudke Vavke, which has a gematria of 26, embodies Hashem's attribute of unconditional love and overriding mercy, the name Elohim generally represents Hashem's attribute of justice, his desire that we earn what he wishes to provide for us. Rabbi Sutton says, give us. The fact that Elohim appears here 26 times indicates a yichud, a unification of these two attributes or these modes. That divine justice not only does not contradict mercy, but is an expression of it. That contemplation, that statement needs to be contemplated. It needs to be understood. Because we think in terms of Elohim as being a left column. And we think in terms of Hashem, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, as being a right column. And here Rabbi Sutton is explaining that when we combine the two, we're in the central column. So that this psalm would be considered this a central column psalm. Do I think that there are various psalms that are right column and various psalms that are left column and various psalms that are central column? And the answer is yes. Verse 3, but as smoke is dissipated by the wind, so will they be dissipated and dissolved by the breath of his mouth. As wax melts before the fire, so will the wicked perish before the presence of Elohim. Now, if I take a look at the translation in the Chan Mamre, as smoke is driven away, so drive them away. As wax melts before the fire, so let the wicked perish in the presence of Elohim. It's close, but it's not the same. And Rabbi Sutton's additional words that are not in the translation, and you wouldn't expect to see them in the Mechon Mamre because of that, do help us relate to this verse as it relates to the time of Mashiach, to the birth times of Mashiach. Verse 4. The righteous, on the other hand, will rejoice. They will exult before Elohim and delight with joy. Now you would normally expect to see Hashem in place of Elohim in this translation, but the word is Elohim, so it can't be Hashem. But how do you exult before the God of judgment? When a person is righteous, doing righteous acts, doing good deeds, the judgment is a good effect. So you can be happy in front of judgment. You can't exult with joy in front of judgment. You just have to accept that your actions are meant with your consciousness, your kavanah, are meant to be righteous, are meant to be sharing, which is another way to understand righteousness. Verse 5, sing to Elohim, chant praises to his name, soar up to the one who rides over the highest heavens, with his name Yah, and exult greatly in his presence. We have discussed the meaning of Yah and why the transition, what is the meaning of the transition. Verse 6, for although he is above in the abode of his holiness, Elohim is a father of orphans and a defender of widows, as Hannah she was reading it. And you'll notice that this translation is in a different order than the order of the words in the Hebrew. In the Machon Mamre, the translation is related to the orphans and defending of widows, or the translation in the Machon Mamre is in the order of the Hebrew. This translation is in a reverse order. Does it help you to understand the verse, or does it confuse it? It's a question you each have to answer for yourselves. This is why we teach what we teach in the way we teach. And someone could say there was a mistake that Hanoch made because he didn't realize that yearning for redemption was there. But if that had been the case, we would never have understood. I would never have been able to point out to you this reversal of the order of the concepts that Rabbi Sutton is doing. The seventh verse I did not read in Hebrew, and it will be the last verse for today. Elohim Moshiv Yechidim Baita Motsio Asirim Bakosharot Achsordim Shachnu Tehita Ficha. Elohim takes those who are solitary and settles them together in one home. He takes those who are imprisoned and brings them to their freedom at an appropriate time. But those who rebel shall end up dwelling in barrenness. There are 11 words, and we have been discussing the number 11. I didn't get through to you. On one hand, the negative has to do with the 10 Sephirot plus the negative system. And on the other, the 11 components of the Ketoret. And the Ketoret is designed to bring us closer to Hashem. So the number 11 can be interpreted positively or negatively, and that choice is always yours. Is the glass half full or is the glass half empty? Is the important part the empty part of the glass or the filled part of the glass? There are 55 letters. That's the Hebrew word nun hey. Now, if it was nun aleph, I would just tell you that it has the meaning of please. And both Nun Hey and Nun Aleph are concealed within each other. I'm having trouble pulling up this web page today. Apologize. Word with the gematria of 55 is ha'adama, which means the land. Hayam, meaning the sea, but it's also a word, a phrase describing God. The God of Bina, the relationship to Bina. God is not Bina. Bina is not a god. Don't make that mistake. Gagan is a Hebrew word. Gematria is 55. Translation is in a garden. But in modern Hebrew, it means in the nursery school. La'achiv, 55, meaning teach the brethren or the brethren's teach. Both of those translations are valid. But the more practical or everyday translation means to a brother. Olid means to beget, is the English translation, but we don't use that word these days. What would you say, how would you translate the word olid, which relates to birth, the giving forth of a child, the revelation of a child? Our time is up, so I will ask quickly if anyone has any questions. While you're unmuting, I will mention that tomorrow night we will have a Zohar class at 7 p.m. West Coast time. That's Motzi Shabbat. The class will be on the parasha of Shlach Lecha. Shalom Gadol to all.
Oh, thank you, Snow.